Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain, Bradley Burrows, and guests.
Hello and welcome along to this, the seventh episode of the NZ Tech Podcast. How are we, guys?
Fantastic.
Hello.
Hello. So tonight we've got myself, Paul Spain, in the studio along with...
Bradley Burrows.
And I'm back, Nathan Mercer. Got invited back again.
So special boy.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, nice to have you on the show again. Well, we thought with all the Microsoft news in the last few days... that it was well worth getting you back on the show with to talk through some of those things that are going on.
Lots been happening with Microsoft in the last week.
Absolutely. So let's have a little bit of a look at what we're going to chat through this week. Obviously, we mentioned it last week, the Mix event in Las Vegas. There's a lot to talk about that was announced there at Mix. There's been some happenings around Office 365. We've got updates for the Xbox. There's been a new law passed in New Zealand around internet and
interesting
and some stuff there. There's been a bit of an issue impacting Skype. There was a website shut down by the FBI that we'll talk about a little bit later, and some local happenings with Telecom New Zealand. And then towards the end, we'll dive into some apps of the week. So those are really our big topics for this episode 7.
It's a busy one.
Let's dive in. Yeah. So the Mix event in Las Vegas, there were some pretty big announcements in a range of areas there. What did you guys find most interesting?
I found all of the Windows Phone 7 Mango updates the most interesting stuff.
Do you want to explain what Mango is, Trevor?
So Mango is the code name for the next version of Windows Phone 7. And
we don't know whether it's going to be called Windows Phone 7.5, Windows Phone 8.
We don't know yet. We're currently calling it Windows Phone Version Next or Windows Phone Mango with inverted commas around it. It's going to have some sort of name, but the Mix conference is for designers who make applications look cool, and it's for developers who code applications. So this was really the first time that both of those two different audiences got to get a look at what's going to be inside Mango.
Right, so the talk was more from that designer and developer perspective rather than necessarily talking about all of the things that us as technology users and gadget lovers will see when those phones come out.
Yeah. It wasn't a feature one.
But it certainly gives a bit of a taste of that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, Microsoft basically announced that there's going to be 1,500 new APIs inside Mango.
So those are things that developers can use to make better, richer applications, more graphical, et cetera, right? It just means better software.
Yeah, so different access to the camera, different access to the gyroscope. Yep. You're going to be able to have applications running in the background, so applications like Spotify for playing music and stuff like that can keep going in the background. All sorts of interesting things. Fast application switching, so you can switch between different applications. So the way that's going to work is, you know, today with Phone 7, you hit back to go back to your start screen or whatever. In Mango, if you hold down the back key, what happens is you basically get a carousel view of all of the applications that are running on the device at the time. And that includes, like, for instance, IE on the device, it supports 6 tabs. All of your different tabs appear inside there as well.
Yeah, it sounds like a really nice implementation. Yep. And it also seems as though they're handling it in a way that thinks about battery life. And if we look across the smartphones that are available today, some of them are really bad in terms of battery life.
Yeah.
And Windows Phone 7 is what I use, you know, pretty much most of the time. That's my primary phone platform now. But I was sitting around the table with some guys using a range of handsets last week, and two of them were Android users, and one of them said to me, "Well, how long does your battery last on Windows Phone 7? He says, could you get through to like 5 p.m.? and I was just thinking, what? And, I said, well, no, I mean, you know, that my battery lasts me all day. But I'd said all day, and he said, "Oh, do you mean till 5 p.m?" And so there are some smart things in the way Windows Phone 7 has already been developed to handle, you know, keep your battery going whilst you're doing so many things. You know, I'm listening to podcasts to and from work. You talk on your phone. You're obviously using your apps and Internet Explorer and so on.
So, in fact, like podcasts, that's another thing that got announced. It's going to be supported on the device. I think only in the US, actually, but. There'll be
a way to bring them down directly to your device.
Yeah. Over the air rather than tethered through the Zoom client.
Yeah, whereas at the moment, I guess when you look at the way that it works with the Zoom client, that's actually is extremely nice when compared to, you know, some of the other platforms. You know, iPhone, you've got to plug in to iTunes to
at least it works when you come back home and you plug your device into the power on the wall. It'll sense that you've got a Wi-Fi network in your house, and it will start synchronizing your device back to your PC.
Yeah, that's one thing I find is really useful with the Windows Phone 7 is you duck off to work in the morning, you've got this commute. You know, you haven't plugged your phone into your computer or anything like that, but you've got all this content that's come down over Wi-Fi, and you've got, you know, fresh stuff to listen to every day, which is really nice.
So, Brad, you were talking about the demo that you saw of IE9 on the device and comparing to a couple of different phones. So what was the deal with that?
So they're going to have IE9 on the Windows Phone 7 now. One of the cool things about IE9 is it's going to use the graphics capability of Windows Phone to accelerate it. So they did a really interesting demo where they got up on stage, they had an iPhone 4, they had a Windows Phone 7 device, and they had an Android device. I think it was the Galaxy S.
It was.
And they go to a standards website which runs a UI-based test to see how the performance is of your phone for doing video and in games and all those type of things that those phones are starting to do now.
So it's a public site.
Yep,
the IE Test Drive site, and the test was called the Speed Reading.
Speed Reading.
It was quite an interesting test, wasn't it?
Yes.
The results. I mean, I guess it was predictable because it's a Microsoft event. They're not going to show off something that shows how bad the phone is, but what were the results?
So the iPhone 4 did 2 frames a second and took about 3 minutes to render. The Android device sat at around about 12 to 14 frames a second, I think it was.
11,
sorry. And then the Windows Phone was 26 frames a second.
Yeah.
And it did it in about 3 or 4 seconds to render it. But
it looked really cool, though, didn't it?
It looked really good, but what they're trying to show is that the new browsers are actually starting to use the hardware capabilities of the phones.
And so you're using the GPU in the machine. The thing that I thought was quite cool was that the iPhone actually got a head start, because the guy on stage has only got, you know, two hands and he can't hit all three devices start at once. So the iPhone actually started a couple of seconds beforehand and it was still the worst.
Yeah, he was being a bit cocky there.
What
they're trying to show is that they're starting to utilize the power of the hardware now. And that what that's going to be for people using the phones will be applications are going to start being a lot more richer in the UI. And for doing video now, we don't just use phones to make calls. We use them as portable media players. So that's good.
No, that's good. Well, I guess what I liked about it is that we're seeing Windows Phone, which doesn't have a huge presence in the market right now. It's a new product. There's not a big market share, but we're seeing that Microsoft really is committed to delivering the capabilities that it needs to be a major player. There's obviously been some market research things in the last 2 or 3 weeks where some of the big
IDC and Gartner.
Companies like IDC and Gartner are saying, well, we see Windows Phone as outpacing the iPhone going forward in sales, which is I'm not sure what will actually happen, but it's certainly interesting predictions, and I guess it gives us some picture that the market is changing, and Windows Phone is going to be a reasonably major player over time.
You do kind of wonder how those analysts can predict what's going to happen in 3 or 4 years time.
It's the Nokia factor.
Well, six months ago their story was completely different. So, you know, any factor can come in and they say, oh, because of that we're going to change it. Nobody really knows exactly where it's going. I had a call from someone this week who runs the IT for a business of 100 or so staff, and he was telling me about the mix of technology that his staff have for mobile email and so on. And at the moment, it's a mix of BlackBerry and I think some Sony Ericsson devices that are using the Microsoft ActiveSync protocol. And you know, he was very, very keen to move in the Windows Phone 7 direction as he sees it being appropriate for that business use. So if Microsoft can nail this, you know, nail things with a device that does all the fun consumer stuff in terms of music, Xbox and so on, and really win some market
custom
share.
Ringtones. Well, custom ringtones.
It's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Get those things sorted and now the business stuff, then, you know, I think that there is definitely a good opportunity for Windows Phone 7
I think the other big thing
to do well longer term.
I think the other thing also is the price point. You know, with hopefully the Mango release, they're going to be releasing it on cheaper styled phones, what's called chassis 2 phones,
yeah,
and which will allow the phones to be more competitive against Android-based devices, which are in that $400 to $500 range. Yeah. Whereas at the moment, the current Windows Phone 7 is competing against your iPhone ranges and some of the more expensive Android devices.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still good bang for buck when you put it next to the top Android and the top or any of the Apple devices. It actually sits very well there in terms of pricing. So
there was one cool demo on Mango with the Mix conference that I really liked, and it was a Qantas application.
Oh, that looked cool.
And basically what it was they were doing much deeper integration with the Live Tiles. And so one of the new features in Mango is the way it can do geolocation with the phone.
Oh, so, this is cool, yeah.
So the Qantas app, it basically detects the fact that it knows that you're in Las Vegas, it knows that your flight is in an hour's time, it knows physically where you are, it knows that you're not going to be able to get to the flight on time, and the application basically prompts you and runs you through the Qantas site, tells you to rebook. But a couple of the other things, cool things it does is it also integrates with the alarm on the phone. So that's built in.
That Live Tile integration where it goes from green that you're okay to suddenly red that you're late for your flight.
Yeah, you're not going to make it. Do you want to do something about it?
Yeah, do you want to reschedule, go to a taxi and stuff?
So. Yeah, I think there's some cool stuff coming there. And they also demoed Skype, didn't they? That's coming down the wire.
Yep.
So that's, later on the
year. When we talked about those 1,500 new APIs, you've got basically full TCP/IP access. So, you know, we should start to see a whole lot of the different applications that, you know, developers can't write today. Like, for example, they can't write Wi-Fi hotspot, you know, and in theory, in Mango, with all those APIs, we should start to see applications like that.
Yeah, so there have been a few limitations there, which, you know, I know for some has left them thinking, oh, I'm not ready to jump across to the platform yet. So
May 25th, Angry Birds is coming to Windows Phone 7. There's a lot of happy people in our office wanting Angry Birds.
There's going to be no work happening that day.
It's just... So for me, the other one that was also a big announcement was IE10. Right. That one came out of the blue for me.
IE9 just came out, and Microsoft's already talking about IE10.
So what's happening to Microsoft? I mean, we expect Microsoft to be this big sort of slow moving giant that you know, there's usually a few years between releases of Internet Explorer. There's definitely some changes going on.
Yeah, I mean, with the IE9, they started doing tests. They called them test drive builds, and they're basically developer builds.
Yep.
So it's just the first platform preview. There's no Chrome. There's no address bar. It's just the core rendering engine.
But it's a good. I think it's a good sign to see, and it's a sort of an acceleration
Browser wars again. Yeah,
yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
The thing that they announced at the conference is there's going to be a new platform preview build for developers every
8 to 12 weeks. Yeah. 8 to 12 weeks, which is going to be good. I mean, what that means is IE10, if you're reading between the lines and look at the release schedule of Windows 8, potentially will be around the same time.
Hmm. And they also announced that IE10 is only going to run on...
Oh, yeah, this is a big one.
Windows 7 and onwards, isn't it?
Yeah, Windows 7. So Windows Vista users, if you do exist, you will be on IE9. IE10 will be only for Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Yeah, interesting. Now, we just mentioned Skype coming to Windows Phone 7. Now, Skype's been in the news a little bit in the last few days about a security bug in their Android version.
So is it all versions of Android, and is it all versions of the Skype app, or is it what's the picture?
My understanding is if you run Skype on Android, then if you get a dodgy app, which we know that malware does end up landing on Android, then that malware can quite easily get access to your contact information, your various other bits and pieces that's in Skype. So
it's quite a nasty one.
So it's not ideal. I've run Skype on Android myself, and Skype made a point of sending me an email and saying, "Hey, we're aware of this. Be cautious, etc., and we're working on a new version, so we can expect an update for that to come through soon." So interesting. I mean, it's another one of those things where it's a reminder to be cautious about, you know, the technologies you're using, the platforms you're using, passwords, etc.
It's amazing now if you start to look at all the mobile devices that hackers and you know, rogue programs, they're starting to become more and more prolific. And you know, when are we going to have antivirus software on phones? You know, it's going to happen.
Well, there are antivirus programs in the Android marketplace, and some of them are actually malware.
The irony in that one.
Not ideal, is it?
No, not ideal.
I mean, talking about security issues as well, I was chatting to somebody in the last few days who said his Twitter account had been hacked.
Ooh.
And somebody had, you know, had obviously they'd run some sort of bot to try and hack into people's Twitter accounts. And in this case, he was using a password that wasn't as secure as it should have been.
A1, B2, C3, D4. I say it every week, is not a secure password.
Neither is password.
Yes. Oh, God.
So, but in that case, he said to me, I was with my girlfriend, and she said, "Hold on, what's this message that says it's from you? We're sitting next to each other. What's going on?" She wow. had a direct message from his account that was, you know, clearly some spam.
That's dodgy.
But you know, it just serves as a reminder to definitely, you know, have those secure passwords, keep them different across your sites, and you know, keep your machines locked down. It doesn't matter what platform you're on. You know, there are risks around security. So, you know, I know we point out one platform or another from time to time where there are specific issues, but the issues apply across the board.
Could happen to anyone. Right?
Absolutely. So, Now,
Office 365, maybe, Paul?
Yes.
Shall we talk about Office 365?
Office 365, that was the next thing on the agenda. Thank you, Brad.
We'll keep that one on the podcast, I think, for this week. You know, the tongue rolling, it was pretty good.
So this was something that got announced this time last night, Monday night, about 6 o'clock. Office 365 went into public beta.
There was a function down at the Microsoft offices down in Auckland in the Viaduct to have all the media there and to sort of show it off. What does it actually consist of, Nath?
Well, so basically, Office 365 is the newest version of the Business Productivity Online Services Suite, or BPOS, which is a great name.
That is a crazy name.
But
this is Microsoft's.
It's a cloud productivity suite.
So it's Office that runs in an online context.
Sure, it's Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Link Online, and one of the interesting new things is that you can also purchase Office. The Office desktop client as part of your Office 365 subscription. And one of the cool things about that Office subscription is that you can also run that on up to 5 devices that you own. So your work PC, your home PC, your netbook, and I don't know what the other two would be. But
So the key thing with Office 365 is you get Word and that in the cloud, but you also get the ability to download the full rich client onto your local device as well, as so that when you lose your internet connection, you've still got Office to work locally.
Yes.
Okay.
So you've got the Office web apps, which is PowerPoint web app, OneNote web app, Excel, and Word.
They're great apps. I've used them and obviously compared them to, you know, Google have got their Google apps and Gmail that has been their sort of, you know, free consumer tools that they're also sort of labeling as business products, and there's certainly, you know, businesses that are using that stuff. But if you put the two side by side,
there was a great quote going around this morning, and it goes something like Office 365 is to Google Apps as Xbox Live is to Pong. It's in a different league. And so that was a great quote that was going around on Twitter this morning.
Interesting. Well, we'll see what reviews come back and what people think of it. But certainly from what I've seen of the Office 365 stuff, I mean, it is a very different.
I think one of the product. one of the cool things for New Zealand small business users is that today Microsoft only sells their BPOS if you've got more than five or more users.
Yep.
And Office 365, you can buy it just for one.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the sort of thing that you might buy from home just to know that all your files are backed up, that you've got a good quality email service that can link into a smartphone. So many people have got, you know, sort of a extra or something like that type email account that doesn't really integrate well with an iPhone or Android or Windows phone, whatever you've got, it doesn't do that well. You know, if you lose your phone, you're going to lose your contacts and your calendar and all that stuff. So
and like you said, Office 365 supports all of those, even supports BlackBerry as well. So it basically does all of your smartphones.
Actually, that's a good point. We were just talking about before around sort of BlackBerry, and they're actually going to have Office. They're going to be doing a partnership with Microsoft and Office.
Yeah, there is some sort of partnership there with Office and with Office 365.
So on the BlackBerry devices, which is good because, I mean, a BlackBerry, especially in the US, is a business phone and it's kind of target market. If you want to try it, where is it? Microsoft.co.nz?
Office365.co.nz, and you can actually sign up for the beta there and away you go.
Okay.
And so it's launching later this year, but in beta now.
Good. Oh, that's interesting. Certainly be keen to hear back from listeners what they think, particularly anybody who's using Google Apps.
Yeah.
And just, you know, what they think, and I'm sure, you know, there'll be preferences in either direction. But you know, definitely keen to hear what people's preferences are, what they like and dislike either way.
There'll be pros and cons for each one.
Somebody's phone is going off. Somebody forgot to turn their phone down.
That was my wife. Whoopsie.
All right. Now, next on the agenda, we have the shutdown of PokerStars.com by the FBI.
This is close to your heart, isn't it, Paul?
Hey. No, I've never used PokerStars.com, but I did use their associated site, PokerStars.net. I haven't done for a long time, but effectively these guys had two websites, right? They had PokerStars.net, which is just a fun online poker games, and then alongside that there was PokerStars.com and I think, you know, some others out there as well that were true gambling sites where you could go and credit card details and gamble online. And the big issue is that online gambling is illegal in the States, right? You can't run a business doing that. You did used to be able to, but they shut that down a few years ago. And it seems that these guys have come unstuck and the FBI have really clamped down on them.
Mm.
So I saw online on Sydney Morning Herald, there was a huge article on it saying all these people are pulling out their money and it was real panic over there. Was it quite a large service in this part of the world, do you know? Or
I think a pretty large global service. I mean, in terms of the online poker type thing, that's certainly the main site I've heard. I know there are lots and lots of them out there.
The fact that they advertise on TV means there must be a
pretty
lot of users,
scale,
and they must be making money out of it to afford to do TV ads in New Zealand.
I think they turn over hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, it's a huge business, absolutely. Mm. So it's not just some little half-bit website that are. You know, a kid launched somewhere. It's a very serious business, and they've pulled them up on money laundering type charges and so on. So they'd moved the PokerStars.com out of the States, but we're basically pulling the money back in inappropriate manners and all sorts. So so be careful if you've got if you're doing online gambling and other such things, then. Yeah, if it was there, then you might not be able to get your money back if you had a whole lot sitting in your PokerStars.com account. Now, Telecom New Zealand have been in the news this week.
Yes, and I actually just thought about something else we can talk about Telecom in a second too.
Well, on Sunday, what I noticed on Sunday was there were a bunch of people online saying, hey, we can't get access to certain websites, to secure websites internationally and so on, so they weren't able to get into certain Google services, Twitter, various other things, and that was from about 2 p.m. onwards till about 4.
No one claimed a Microsoft conspiracy or anything at that point.
Well, maybe some of the Microsoft stuff was down as well. I mean, by the sounds of it, it was a pretty broad a broad hit. But yeah, it was about 2 hours worth before things started coming right. By the sounds of it, now what we haven't heard back yet, and I don't know if you guys have heard anything, is really an explanation from Telecom, and that's a pretty
I understand they haven't actually said what the problem was. What seemed to happen is that I wonder if it was a problem with their proxy servers and their caching equipment, because I didn't experience the outage myself, but what I heard was that sites that you go to using SSL were still working, but sites that didn't use SSL were down.
I thought it was actually the other way around.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, you know, even if it was the other way around, that kind of indicates that it wasn't the international link, that it was actually something in there.
No, and it was only Telecom retail subscribers that were hit with the issue. So, instance, if you're on Vodafone and other things, but you're running over Telecom's, you know, ADSL network and so on, you weren't impacted.
If you were on Orkhon or if you're on Snap, you were still working, right?
My Vodafone connection was fine as far as I'm aware. I mean, I can't remember whether I was actually at home online at that time, but you know, I didn't come across any issues.
So the other thing too, I'm not sure if you guys saw, was Telecom sold Yahoo Extra.
Yeah,
did you see that?
Yes, yeah.
Which is kind of weird, because they only bought it a few years ago, and they were going to develop into this giant portal, and they've basically given up the ghost and flicked it onto Yahoo.
Yeah, well, it was a sort of 50-50 venture, wasn't it?
It was a JV.
Yeah. So they'd initially done something in years prior with MSN.
Yep.
And then they moved on to do something with Yahoo, and now they've just sort of stepped out of that picture.
Yep. Mm.
So I guess that's, you know, that makes some sense for them to actually focus on their core businesses.
And it sounds like Yahoo's still involved, like hosting their email platform and stuff like that, but apparently all the branding, all goes away. It's gone away already, has it?
Well, they weren't really using the extra brand anyway. Telecom, you know, haven't used that for anything else for some time. So, I mean, what else could they do?
Yeah. But interesting.
Yep. And the other bit with Telecom was that they've just been fined
today
$12 million for
$12 million bucks. It's the highest penalty ever dished out under the Commerce Act.
Yep. Antitrust. No, anti-competitive, sorry.
Anti-competitive action. So
we're recording this on Tuesday, so if you're just wondering which day it was, it was Tuesday.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big slap on the hand, isn't it?
For New Zealand.
They got found guilty in October 2009 for stuff they did back in 2001 to 2004. And they call it data tailing. They were basically charging more than they should have been for their wholesale network.
Never.
And the judge basically found that they did it on purpose. They leveraged their market position and power, and they got stung $12 million today.
Yeah, that's pretty major. But they don't seem to maybe agree. I've heard that they're going to be challenging that in court.
I haven't heard that. They do say that they didn't do it on purpose, and there were technical things in the network, which is the reason why it was happening. And
there's certainly been a lot of changes in the organisation since then, haven't there?
Yeah.
And you know, I think changes in leadership and so on. So those sort of things that were much more common a few years ago, I certainly hope and believe we've probably seen the back of that.
Yep.
But you know, there's a lot of debate out there about those things, and you know, time will tell. But I certainly hope we don't see any more of that stuff happening again.
Mm. Yeah. On Telco News, I just remembered something else I'm going to throw in. 2Degrees. Did you guys see that they grew by 30%? Their market share. Sorry, their overall revenue grew by 30%. So good on 2Degrees for growing that quickly over the last year. It's fantastic.
Yeah, they're certainly doing really well, and they're now expanding the cities that they've got. Yeah. You know, they've got full 3G in, whereas at the moment they obviously you know they can't have coverage over the whole country themselves at the moment. So you roam onto Vodafone's network as part of their agreements.
But no, I think they've done great to normalise some of the telco market as well. It's been really good to see.
I see today they announced that their all-you-can-eat $149 a month plan, which initially was only going to be for 10,000 people, is now opened up and available to anyone. So,
and that tends to happen, isn't it? You know, somebody announces some bit of technology, deal, pricing, whatever. Oh, it's a trial.
Yeah.
They usually keep going, don't they? So, cool.
Love their TV ads too. They always bring a smile to my face when I see their TV ads.
You've got to love them.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. No, I think they've done very, very well across the board. So, no, that's good.
Sorry to randomise.
And now, also, Office... Sorry, not Office 365. Xbox.
Yes. my favourite topic at the moment.
Tell us what you're excited about with Xbox at the moment, Brad.
Well, two things. We've publicly released the Netflix app, and basically what that does is allow you to have full control with using your Kinect device to be able to control, scroll through the carousel views of all the DVDs in the Netflix collection and then play them using your hand gestures. Yes, Skip's waving at me madly, looking like that.
And you can talk to it.
And you can talk to it as well.
Yep. So now what we're talking about is what we've covered a few weeks ago, which you need to have a US Xbox Live account to use this stuff, and there's a few little tweaks to do that.
So you don't have to have a US Xbox Live account. You have to go into the regional settings of your Xbox and set it to the US. That's for the speech recognition, sorry.
For the speech recognition. But for Netflix app, you need to have a US-based account. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And a US-based IP address.
Yes, which we discussed in episode 2, I think it was.
I think somewhere back there. Yeah. We will end up putting a bit more up on the nztechpodcast.com website about some of these things as time goes on. Yeah. Sorry, we've been pretty busy. This particular little podcast that we've launched has taken off a little bit quicker than what we thought. So, apologies to everyone there, but we're certainly... we will be working on putting a little bit more content up. Also, on that note, with hitting the top of the iTunes charts and getting so many downloads, we've ended up with a few
issues,
technical glitches, shall we say. So, apologies if you've tried downloading the podcast and haven't been able to. We are working on that, and obviously, if you're hearing this and you have managed to download it, but hopefully, you didn't have to try 100 times to download it. So, definitely worth subscribing in iTunes or Zune or whatever to make sure that you get it.
The other thing that I just thought about before as well is the Kinect SDK, which allows developers to write Kinect applications for Windows. They also did some demos at Mix using Kinect to control things for astronomy. So they had this gentleman come up on stage, and they projected the universe up on the ceiling, and he was able to use his hands at like a Minority Report type scenario, plugged in, and he was able to feed it off NASA and zoom through the universe, complete control. He was able to wind back time and sort of show what had happened, and it was actually amazing to watch using the Kinect devices beyond just a gaming thing as well. So
that's the worldwide telescope service. The other one that was quite cool was the guy driving around on a lounge chair with wheels on it, controlling it with his hands.
That stuff's definitely cool, and I'm really interested to see what we're actually going to see come out in terms of a product form over the next few years, now that this Kinect technology is becoming mainstream and you can wave your arms around and control whatever you like.
The thing that I think is quite cool is there's obviously a lot of hackers and innovators and stuff out there that are hacking on the Kinect right now, and it's cool that Microsoft is actually supporting these guys and writing the SDK. From what I understand, with that software developers kit, it's actually going to be really, really powerful. It's going to support all of the Kinect features in terms of all of the microphones, the Kinect SDK. It's going to be able to detect two different people in the room at the same time, and there's kind of all the people that have hacked stuff together today haven't been able to do all those features. So, I think it's coming out pretty soon.
Did we talk about the Google April Fool's joke that sort of backfired on them last week?
No, I don't think we did cover that.
Can I quickly cover that one? So last week, when April Fool's happened, obviously on April the 1st, Google sent out a April Fool's joke saying that you can control your Gmail with voice and hand recognition now, and away you go. Suddenly the research guys got a hold of it.
Which obviously you couldn't.
You couldn't do it at the time, and it was sort of like, they thought it'd be really funny, ha-ha.
Because it would be so impossible.
Yeah, so impossible. Microsoft research guys got a hold of it. Within 24 hours, they'd written a Kinect app to be able to do that, and then they demoed it the next day, pretty much, and were actually controlling their Gmail and doing it with their voice and everything, and Google had to pull down their April Fool's joke page to sort of, because suddenly the video was up online on YouTube, so... very interesting using Kinect and how fast you can actually get it to go through.
Interesting. We must get some Google guys on the show, because I'm sure that they can mock Microsoft in one or two ways as well.
Which would be Microsoft.
That's good. All right, now ebook things. Nathan, you had a few thoughts. You obviously weren't here for last week's show, and we were talking about some of the apps and so on the iPad and Kindle.
I listened to the episode, and I'm a Kindle user. I've had a Kindle for a while, and
you sound like you're into an AA meeting.
There was a
Kindle's Anonymous.
Yeah, there was there's a couple of interesting things happening in the Kindle space, and one of them is that Amazon are actually producing a cheaper version that is ad supported.
Ooh.
So you get a decent discount in exchange for seeing ads on your on the power saver screen, and also scrolling along the bottom of the device. Now the tidbit that I was talking about and wanted to share is that the Amazon do ship the Kindles to New Zealand. You can buy them straight out of the US and get them to New Zealand. And if you buy the 3G version, which you guys were talking about last week, it's actually got a WebKit-based web browser in it. Now, if your billing address for Amazon is set to New Zealand, they'll ship you the device. Your web browser can only go to a few web pages, like, for example, Wikipedia. If you get it shipped to New Zealand, but you use a US billing address, which you can probably make up, or 90210 in California or whatever, the web browser on the device will work for any website, and you'll get free internet 3G in about 3/4 of the countries around the world.
Ooh.
And if you go searching on your favorite internet search engine and looking for that, there's also ways of actually tethering that Kindle to a PC to get free 3G internet.
I have heard of that. I think eventually they're going to shut that down if people get too carried away.
Especially after this podcast, they will.
Yeah. So I just thought that was an interesting little.
Yeah,
little
I remember reading early on when I got my one from the States, and I don't think at that stage they gave you full web access outside of the States. This is something that you've tried.
Yeah, it works fine.
Yeah.
They do say it's an experimental feature.
That's
right. And to be perfectly honest, it's a WebKit based browser.
It's a very poor browser, isn't it? It's a basic browser.
Yeah. One of the cool things is, you know, you can browse to a page and you can put it into this reading article mode, and it basically gets rid of all of the ads and all of the formatting and just makes it look like a nicely formatted page. So it's a great experience.
Mm.
And as you guys were saying last week, you know, pretty cool with one of those e-readers with the 3G wireless WAN built in.
Yeah, I do remember reading early on when I heard that, you know, they're shipping this device that gives you free, you know, 3G access via Vodafone or whoever. I thought, surely people are going to want to pull out the part that does that, because that capability, free access to Vodafone or any other network, it's got to be worth a lot more than the price that the Kindle itself is worth.
Yeah.
And sure enough, there are a bunch of people online that tell you how to rip the thing to pieces, pull out the 3G bits and pieces, and then plug it into whatever you like.
Yeah.
So we're not encouraging our listeners to do that, but it is certainly an interesting thing for the hackers and real tech heads out there who like a challenge.
The final interesting thing about the internet connection, it seems to go back through Ireland. Don't know why, but if you play around with it, all of the traffic gets routed back through Ireland. Don't know why, but there you go.
Oh well,
I'm trying to think of a joke, but I just could get in so much trouble right now, so I'm not going to say anything.
Now, New Zealand, there's some other local news.
Yeah, a big one.
About a law that's been passed here. It's just sort of slipped in under urgency by our national government.
Yep.
What have they done this week?
So you go.
Well, this is
a big one.
This is big, you know, big news.
It is huge.
It's been kind of, there was a thing called Section 92A, which was last year. It was, you know, big news then. And as you say, this new thing was passed under urgency. It's a thing called the Copyright Infringing File Sharing Amendment Bill.
Good Lord, that's
a bit of a mouthful. But net-net, designed to stop illegal file sharing, designed to stop people, the unauthorized downloads of music and movies. The thing that I found interesting about it was I was actually watching Parliament TV while the debate was happening in the chamber, and it's probably the one time they've never had so much traffic to the Parliament website, and it's certainly the longest that I've ever watched Parliament TV. Every other time it's been for a couple of minutes. I watched it for a few hours.
Wow.
It was very interesting, and the reason why it was interesting is that there were surreal levels of technical ignorance from people from the MPs talking about torrents and talking about things like that.
Yeah, now, no understanding of
right.
They obviously did a lot of consultation with the IT community. They went out and spoke to people, made sure they fully understood it before they went in.
And it was interesting. I was on Twitter at the time, and I follow almost 3,000 people. And when that debate was happening in the chamber, that was the only thing that I was seeing in my Twitter feed was just everyone talking about that. There was a great MP there, Gareth Hughes from the Greens, and the Greens were the only people that did it that didn't vote for it, and a couple of independents, Chris Carter and Honi Harawira. But basically, it passed. And what it means is that people can get their internet connections chopped off if the copyright holders in the US make a notification to their internet provider and allege that they have been downloading copyrighted material.
Now, the key there is alleged. So, for instance, if I was a copyright holder in the US and I allege that Skip has suddenly downloaded something he shouldn't, Skip will get his internet connection. If it's after three strikes, Skip will lose his internet connection. He then has to go to the expense of proving that he didn't do that.
That's an interesting...
It's a little bit more complicated than that, though, isn't it? To get cut off, there's still a process to go through. It doesn't automatically happen with this one. And that's the change from the previous bill that they were looking at doing last year.
But you have to go to the expense of actually proving you didn't have to do it, which is...
I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but that your point, Brad, that does switch things on its head in terms of the burden of proof to prove that you're innocent is actually on you.
Or the company, because it can actually be taken to a small business as well if their ISP is basically going
through it. Think about a school, think about a business, think about things like that.
A library?
I do wonder how long it'll be before an MP actually gets their internet connection at home chopped off because one of their kids was downloading stuff.
Because somebody's alleged it, and somebody's decided to say, well, we're gonna make a bit of a point here.
Now, one of the MPs tweeted that they had just downloaded a song
that was Melissa Lee, the Korean MP.
Yeah,
from
she
National.
Said she downloaded it from a Korean site, and someone tweeted back saying, "I hope that was a legal version. Did you buy it?" And she went back. She came back with some weird answer, and they weren't quite sure that she could have actually already broken the law when it was just come into place. Mm. So it's it's not going to solve the problem.
No, I don't think it does. And I think there are different schools of thought on what's an appropriate way to act online, and how to deal with copyrighted material and so on. But the way this has been handled doesn't seem like the a fair outcome.
Now, if you want to have a really good laugh and you're having a slow day at work, go to YouTube, search on this on NZ Internet Bill, I think it's under, and quite a few people have now made a parody clips of the parliamentary sort of 2-hour session into about 5 minutes, and it is absolutely hilarious to watch the ignorance of some of the people there. It is just brilliant.
Great. All right, we're never going to get funding from
New Zealand on air now. This is gone.
We will put that up on the NZ Tech Podcast site too, you can find it much easier. All right, now we're going to cut across right now to our new correspondent in Australia.
Welcome.
Ken Green, how are you there, Ken?
I'm good, guys. How are things back home?
Going very well here in New Zealand, but I hear there's some interesting news in Australia this week with the banks. What's going on?
Well, this happened last Thursday. National Australia Bank had a massive computer glitch that was reported in the papers about to stuff up everybody's salaries. Basically, they lost their money in the system. NAB has now got the nickname NAB, which is pretty much how they've been doing, handling people's money, just sort of nabbing off with it. People have been joking around, sort of saying it's the computer glitch saver account that nobody wants. I guess in a way it's kind of helping people save their money by losing their money in the system so they can't spend it. But it's annoyed so many people.
Well, this must really be leading to a situation where people want to change their banks, because this happened last year as well, didn't it? And it's got to really mess up people's automatic payments, mortgage payments, all sorts of things, any high purchases and so on, where they've got AP set up. It's going to be a real mess, right?
Absolutely, mate. The overdrawn fees are going to be left, right and centre. People are going to be late or are late on their payments now. And NAB, I don't know how they're going to fix it. People will be bailing out of their bank. And, you know, it's the National Australia Bank. This is the equivalent probably, you know, of the ASB or ANZ or something. It's a huge bank over here. And people are just be bailing out left, right and centre. Now, it wasn't just something they tried to fix on Thursday. Even up till last night, they were still grappling with these embarrassing computer meltdown issues. And just lots of people, just no salary since Thursday. And, I mean, I think they may be back on their feet, like, just today. But, mate, people are just so upset. They're just so mad. I guess on the bright side, there's no ATM fees because no one's got any money to take out of their account. So maybe they're going to save money that way. I don't know. Basically, NAB, I guess, is so secure, not even you can get to your own money. So, mate, it has been a nightmare.
Oh, that's a really crazy situation. And, you know, I recall from last time, they didn't seem to give a good explanation of what had actually happened in their, you know, with their data, why they were, you know, not able to track these transactions until later. It's being called this big computer glitch, but, you know, really they should have attended to it first time around. I imagine they're going to be losing thousands and thousands of customers who are just fed up and we'll be moving elsewhere. I mean, this has got to cost the bank millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh, mate, it's going to be huge, and people will not trust this bank at all. Basically, like you say, yeah, this is round two with these computer glitches. Seriously, somebody get them an IT company that's decent. It just needs help massively. You know, these guys did not fix the problem. Unfortunately, Control-Alt-Delete is not an answer for these huge computer glitches. So these guys, they are in deep poo, really, with this.
Well, great to chat to Ken, and he's off to, he'll be in London next week reporting on the royal wedding. So if he can find some tech news in London, then we'll certainly be talking to him about what's happening over there. But right now, the app of the week.
Ooh, yeah.
Section. Now, we didn't do this last week, so we're definitely going to cover off a few this week. What have we got first up?
So Windows Phone 7 app, which I'm using at the moment, Shazam. Now, Shazam is a cross-platform one. It's across the Android and iPhone devices, as I've been told,
and BlackBerry. Basically available on everything. Yep. It is an awesome app.
Yeah, so one of the cool things, what this does is it actually listens to the music that you're listening to, brings up the song, and inside Windows Phone 7 will then bring up the album that you can either purchase, or if you've got a Zune Pass, or you can listen to online inside the marketplace. But it also gives you all the information from just listening to the lyrics.
So you can be listening to the radio and you think, oh, I'd love to get that track, or wondering what is it, any of that sort of stuff.
Yep.
You just start the app, and what does it do? It captures a bit of the audio and it sends
listens.
It off.
Yeah, listens for a couple of seconds. It's, they've basically got a big database of a fingerprint of a whole lot of different songs.
Millions of songs.
And I've demoed that to a few people that aren't computer people. And even though it's been available for 2 or 3 years, it's the one thing that blows people away. It's just holding your phone up to the speaker, and 5 seconds later, you've got the name of the song.
And the integration into the marketplace, then you can actually see all the albums. And look, my 6-year-old loves it.
Like you said, it's cool.
Yeah, he holds it up, listens, whether it's Lady Gaga or Justin Bieber, whatever he's listening to at the moment.
And is this what you're listening to? And he's wondering what it is.
He's going, Dad, this is so bad. What is, oh gosh, it's Justin Bieber.
Bieber fever.
No, but look, it's a very cool app. And if you are into music and you do have that, oh, I wish I knew what that song was moment, this will solve your problems.
Excellent. That's cool. And there was, that sort of covers it across platform, but there was one other one that you wanted to mention, Nathan.
Oh, so, yeah, my app that I love this week is a Foursquare client for Windows Phone 7. It's called Forth and Mere. Forth as in the number 4th and Mere.
What is Foursquare, quickly, for the
listeners? So it's a geolocation application. You basically check in. It uses your GPS. You check in. You earn credits, badges, awards, mayorships.
I will be mayor one day.
You know, you can post that information on Twitter and Twitter and Facebook and stuff. So go have a look on foursquare.com to sign up for an account. The reason why this Forth and Mere application is so nice is it uses all of the Metro UI inside Phone 7, so it looks like a proper Phone 7 app in terms of pivoting and searching and things like that. It's got a lot more features than the actual the native Foursquare application that's in the marketplace. It's only been available maybe 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I've been using it over the Foursquare one, and it's definitely a step up.
It does seem to be more reliable. The Foursquare one, I find that I have to go and, you know, I have to start it, then exit, then go back into it to make it work, whereas Forth and Mere, I find it just works perfectly every time.
No, that's good.
Interesting tidbit. All Windows 7 OSs will have an O at the end for a code name. I just suddenly thought about that while you're talking about Metro. Metro, Mango, Nodo, they're all going to have O at the end of the... I remember hearing that the other day. Sorry, interesting little tidbit there. You can edit that out if you want. But
thank you for that, Brad.
That's all right.
All right, well, I think that's us through all of the topics for this week. So until next week, thanks very much for listening in. And we'll see you then.
See you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.